Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. And let's talk some Rangers here with you. What do you say? Back in action tomorrow against the Detroit Tigers. And Wolchuk, I happened to be on Twitter over the break there looking at some Rangers Twitter stuff. And I saw you getting, a little excited here around this Jim Bowden quote. Some think it's a possibility the A's will entertain offers for Mason Miller. There are teams that want to make him a starter. That's interesting.
Very.
Obviously a fireballer. I don't think the Rangers would want to do that. But I noticed you threw out the idea that it might require a trading of Sebastian Walcott in order to get a player of Mason Miller's stature. You know, could the Rangers afford him? I mean, what are all the hurdles that go along with this? I'm in, by the way. I learned long ago. Okay. Top prospects, as enticing and as sexy as they might be and how much they're dominating, that doesn't matter because the jump to big league baseball is so big. It swallows up prospects every year like it's nothing, spits them out. So I'll definitely take a sure thing, especially if it's an all-league type of performer like Miller is.
Yeah, it's we kind of threw this out, I think, with Sands a couple months ago. And at the time, it didn't seem like the A's were willing to move him. But it is going to cost you a lot. I think it would start, obviously, with Sebastian Walcott. What else would you have to throw in there? But it is fascinating. Like, if you are one of those teams where, hey, you're not sure, to your point, how these prospects will end up developing. I know a lot of Ranger fans, we lived through Jurickson Profar. We thought Jurickson Profar was going to be the next big thing.
Tanner Shepherd, Martin Perez.
Right. Mike Holt.
Yeah.
Gallo, of course, being one of those guys. So it is something that is uncertain, and you could get, for at least this year, one of the best closers in all of the game to help you out now. But I think the idea of him possibly moving in as a starter creates a whole nother level of conversation and interest from me, at least, here.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want him more? If he wants to be a starter?
It would make me want him more, yeah. I mean, like, I love where he is now, but if he's got that capability, and look, eventually we're going to look up, and 2 years from now, Evaldi's going to retire, and who knows what's going to happen year to year with Jacob deGrom. But, I mean, the Rangers have struggled when it comes to developing pitchers, and I hope that that ends up changing, and Kamar Rocker and Jack Leiter continue to progress, and maybe Cody Bradford can get healthy here eventually, but it does seem like their pathway of getting at least this starting rotation that's been so damn good is going out and acquiring them. So Mason Miller could be another one of those guys.
Yeah, I asked my general manager friend about that, about trying to go get, if you're the Rangers, go get Mason Miller. And I this is what I got back. He says you couldn't get him without several high-end prospects and several major league players. The Rangers couldn't put together a package to get him.
Wow.
That's where my general manager in the league said, my friend said. So I don't know. I mean, he works for his team, but he just kind of he thought about it that the Rangers could not put together a package to go get this guy if they
I think you dangle Sebastian Walcott, the A's would be interested, but I don't think the Rangers want to give up on Sebastian Walcott.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you mention that, I'm like, I'm not even interested in hypothetically going to the package of players that would probably include Wyatt Langford. You know,
yeah.
I want to stay clear of that. But like, Mason Miller is so young and so dominant and has so many years of control under him. I'm not surprised. You know, this is an absolute elite type of player. And still, other than Walcott, the Rangers don't have that many promising young players down there. That's sobering. Evan Grant writing, right now he does not expect moves either way. With the deadline coming up, says the plan is likely to see what happens in the second half of the season. And if the offense does not click, a teardown could come in the offseason. But they don't want to make that decision there. Kennedy Landry agrees, saying that there is unlikely to be any big moves at the deadline, and that if a major overhaul is going to happen, it will happen in the off season. Will you be willing to accept that if we get to the winter and the Rangers offense has not connected yet, that they should tear it down in a meaningful way?
I think so. I mean, yeah, they've obviously, CY's not going to sit there and go, you know, even after the World Series of 23, I mean, I don't think back-to-back seasons of not having success, I think that would lead him to want to do something completely different. So I don't think he would stand pat. This is a shame that the winning 2 out of 3 out of the Houston, it just bought you stay pat.
Yeah.
You know, instead of being like, all right, that was a good series. Our pitching, our deep, everything kind of held up. We got some hitting.
It should be let's go get a closer, because you could have won 3 of those other games, Padres, Angels, and Astros.
There's no question. And this is what's surprising. And I think that probably CY is wanting to go do this, and maybe management or ownership is telling him, we're not going to do this. We're just not. And I was kind of hopeful that a successful Houston weekend was going to lead to going and trying to make things better. But obviously, standing pat is not what I expected at all.
Maybe that's why we're hearing about John Gray to the bullpen, possibly, because that's going to be their
that's
going to
be their answer. Yeah.
And I still think the team's enough. You know, I would hope that when you're talking about tearing it down, we're not talking about tearing down Seager, DeGrom, or Eovaldi. As long as you keep those 3 guys, I think it's possible you could have trades and machinations and move on from guys and bring in different dudes and put together a contender, as long as you got those 3 guys.
Yeah, I think they'd be looking at Jonah Heim, who has not been good since 2023. Josh Young, what's the future looking like there? Obviously, how does Evan Carter play this second half of the season? Wyatt's an untouchable for them, I believe. But those are kind of the guys you're looking at right now. Adolis goes into that conversation too.
Can I put this guy in as an untouchable? But I think if you put him out there, that somebody would clearly bite on him. Josh Smith. I would want Josh Smith on my team no matter what. And just because of all the thing, the last 2 years, all he's done is proven that you can play him at any position. He plays at a high level. He hits he finds ways to get clutch hits. Hits with 2 outs. He's a complete ball player. And I like I say, if you want to move on from that, that would be tough.
You
for
need
me.
Those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You need those guys. So,
I mean, it'd be great if he was a 7 or 8 hitter and you didn't need him to be a key part of your lineup.
But he's hitting like is he in the 270s? I mean,
he's been one of the only guys whose OPS has been in the mid 7s.
And they
for
have
a lot
him
of
leading
year.
Off. And it seems like when the lineup turns over again, he's finding ways to get on base or get a key hit. And so I would be one of those. If I would see why, I wouldn't be interested in moving on from a guy like that.
No, you really just need to move on from a couple and replace it with incredible production. I hope financially that, Ray McDuck is up for something like that. Yeah. But I guess after this year, if you're not a taxpayer, you can jump back into that game for 2026. You know, they will avoid this year being a repeat taxpayer for a 3rd year in a row that triggers all sorts of nasty bonuses. But they were taxpayers in their World Series year and the year following. So maybe we'll be getting ready to do something like that again. Looks like the Chargers are getting ready to look for a new wide receiver as Mike Williams has retired from the NFL. The team announcing today. The agent, Tony Dandy, informing the Chargers front office, just 30 years old, been working off to the side during the Chargers offseason activities as he's been battling an undisclosed injury. The Chargers had placed him on the PUP, and he's done. So that's a blow there for the Chargers as they're trying to get their offense going.
Yeah, man, they got to get some weapons over there. They really do. I mean, we'll see about Trey Harris, the rookie. We know Ladd McConkey's a good player, but, I mean, they might want to get in the mix here, right? On
Terry McLaurin, I saw Sean Merriman, their old awesome edge rusher, was already trying to recruit Terry McLaurin for them. But Keenan Allen is also out. I mean, Amari Cooper's out there. There's some veteran wide receivers if they wanted to kick the tires there. But I wouldn't mind them picking up the phone and saying, hey, Washington,
Yeah.
Terry McLaurin.
That would swing the balance of power, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think the Commanders over-under right now is 10 wins. I saw they updated the Cowboys to 8.5, at least on BetMGM.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you take McLaurin off that offense, though, I think things could get ugly. Things could get real concerning for Washington in year two of Jaden Daniels. That'd be a heck of a development. Chiefs star wide receiver Rashee Rice sentenced to 30 days jail time, 5 years probation for that multi-car crash that happened here on Central last year.
Mm.
According to release from the Dallas County District Attorney's Office, Rice pled guilty in a district court. That's a third-degree felony charge.
Mm.
Collision involving serious bodily injury and racing on a highway causing bodily injury. I mean, I guess I'm not rooting against the guy to continue his career and everything. That I wish him the best. But I think if you're going that fast in a car, it should be a lot more time than selling some recreational dope to somebody that wants the recreational dope. Am I crazy for that? Should you be getting more time for going 120 miles an hour and causing harm?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you absolutely should. Yeah. And I think if this was a normal person, normal financial kind of average dude, this ends up way worse.
You got to get lawyered up.
Yeah,
you get 30 days.
I would think so, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it's just terrifying. You know, can you imagine like the worst possible thing that could happen in most of our lives on a given day is just a high speed car accident because somebody's being an idiot. Mm-hmm. That's the bigger threat to society, if you ask me. But anyway, a Dallas district court judge ruled Rice can serve the jail time at any point during the 5-year probationary period. And he received divert adjudications and stuff like this. But the NFL now can expedite its disciplinary process. I think they're doing much better for themselves these days, waiting for the end of the legal process before they do something. He is likely to receive a multi-game suspension at some point during the upcoming 2025 season. Sounds like 2 to 4 games.
That's what I was reading. Two to four games is what it most likely will be.
And he'd serve it this year per Schefter.
We're going to have SB highlights coming up here in LA Live at 5:40. Congrats to Cooper Flagg for winning Best Male Collegiate Athlete. It's a heck of an accomplishment. Pretty cool for him.
Hell yeah,
Coop. Hopefully it's the beginning of a prestigious and well-awarded career. Shea Gildas-Alexander and Simone Biles won Best Male and Female Athletes. Biles, the 11-time Olympic medalist, also claimed the night's first award, the best championship performance. And she beat out Steph Curry, Freddie Freeman, Rory McIlroy. Steph Curry last year in that Olympic final game, was that against France? That was insane what he did. I didn't see what Simone Biles did in the Olympics, but it must have been pretty damn impressive to be better than Steph Curry's.
Yeah, she was running it up for sure. And I remember just doing like just how high she gets, how tiny she is, but like how high she gets on her stunts.
Yeah.
Really ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
elite athlete.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's the best.
I get it.
And she came back from having that mental anxiety thing in the previous Olympics.
The twisties.
Yeah, the twisties. Sounds terrifying if you watch that documentary that she did. I mean, that is like, oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, I think she felt like any of us would have felt like if you.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
You were 20 feet in the air spinning around. She was, I mean, she suddenly got some awareness of like, wait, what am I doing exactly?
Yeah.
I'm getting 20 feet in the air and spinning with 100 miles an hour. Yeah, this is crazy, right? But somehow she managed to block it out again. You know, I wish I could block out that feeling of terror in the air. You know, it'd come in quite handy right here in a week and a half when we get ready to fly to Oxnard. I'm already having sweats about it, by the way. I want to let you guys know.
No.
Sweaty palms. I might be going into the dock for some Valium or some Xanax or something. So if you guys see me passed out, like drooling on myself, and the flight attendant's like, sir, wake up, just let her know. He's cool.
I'll claim you.
Trust me, this is better than the alternative.
he's fine.
Yeah, we don't need an Odell Beckham situation up there.
Hey, as long as we can bum one off, you know what I'm saying?
for sure. Dallas Wings pull into the All-Star break at 6-17, bro. after playing the Vegas Aces, and AJ Wilson just crushed him last night with 37. But it was 90-86, so it's kind of a moral victory there. They were close. They were within two late.
Improvement.
I think the Aces are down a little bit this year too, aren't they? They're like a 500 team.
Not as good as they. I saw Minnesota was in first.
Yeah, they're in the West.
Your guess is as good as mine, bro.
New York and Minnesota.
Yeah, New York, I know, started the season on a tear.
Yeah, I think that the Aces are probably a 500 team right now.
Huh? Interesting.
You'll see if I was right.
I'll find out here pretty soon. I was hoping to get your thoughts on the Open Championship.
The Open.
Are you tracking that pretty close?
You know what? When I got up this morning, I was seeing the first groups that were out. It seems like it's 4-under winning this thing right now.
4-under is the leader with Olson, Fitzpatrick.
Okay, Olson. This was a
couple
this,
other guys.
This was a group that were first out today. So, and I don't know.
Oh, the weather changed.
I don't know if the weather's gotten progressively worse as we've gone along, but there's a lot of the heavy hitters are in the afternoon flight.
They're struggling.
And I didn't check on the scores, but I know that Olson and those guys, everybody that went out early seemed to have a little bit better run at it. We'll see what happens with the afternoon group.
Phil Mickelson had one of his best rounds in a decade.
Or 1-under.
He's 1-under.
1-under, yeah, there we go.
Scotty Scheffler, of course, dealing with the realization that winning does not make him happy this week. He went viral. He's 3-under through 18, just went off the pace. Yeah. So he's in the house with a dang good round there. Scotty, this is the one major he hasn't won yet, right? I think he hasn't finished even in the top three.
No, I think last year I think he was 7th.
Okay.
But you're right, top three, that would be 7th, would not be top three.
29 years old here, Scotty Scheffler. I think everybody in Dallas rooting for him. What did you think about what he said earlier this week? I thought it was quite profound and wise.
Yeah.
You know, beyond his 29 years.
I know. It's crazy. Every time he speaks, even you just look at his face, you're like, I can't believe he's only 29.
Yeah.
he gives off like 40-year-old dude.
Yeah.
Very mature. You said wise beyond his years. Yeah, I loved what he said. I thought I think that he's on a different level of huge success that like we all would be kind of like, man, there's no way I would reach that. But
yeah,
we've all felt the feeling of I've been working so hard at something, I achieved it, and then there's the now what factor.
Yeah,
right. And so it's like, at what point do you kind of say, okay, there's more to life than just simply accomplishing goals that I have on planet Earth, because it'll never end. It's just like the money thing. I want this much money. You get that. All of a sudden, okay, then there's more to be had. There's always more, 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 more. At what point do you grasp onto the idea that there's more to life than anything that you're doing from a success standpoint on Earth?
Yes.
Right?
And I think that's one of the real benefits and blessings of that level of success financially and in your pro sports world, is if you get to the top financially and competitively and you realize, holy crap, I'm still not happy, I'm miserable, that is what allows them to consider what will make me happy. You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of people who are stuck in the rat race and in the grind always assume for decades of life, if I could just get to this level of success, then I would be happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the guys that get there and go, oh, wow, why am I not happy? Then it opens up just a whole nother curiosity. And you know, I mean, salute to him, because you do have a lot of people that reach the level of success and all you get is more greed. Or more desire to not lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you see it with the Aaron Rodgers stuff, right?
Yeah.
He gets the Super Bowl, and then he's looking around like, oh, okay, so I did this thing that I've set out to do my whole life, and now what? What else is there?
You know, it's funny, but you asked me at the Open Championship, and you think about Scotty being, you know, from Dallas and all that. The Open Championship does have a great history of Texans winning it, though, which is bodes pretty well for him. You know, if you go back with the Ben Hogans and then the Lee Trevinos, I think Bill Rogers won it. He was in the 80s. That was a golfer I remember. Justin Leonard, Jordan Spieth. So Texans do have a good history of winning this. So hopefully Scotty will bring that the claret jug home.
That would be sweet.
We could all drink out of it.
That would be sweet.
Drink.
At least it'll make us happy.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to run. It's the G-Bag Nation. Got the C-Note. Cowboys news of the evening. What do you got, Chief?
We got a breaking pass rusher being paid, not named Micah.
Oh, is it TJ Watt?
It is TJ Watt.
Do you got numbers? We will see. On the other side.
Yeah, we will. We will.
Okay,
yeah,
we'll get them. We'll have numbers in reaction to that. The C note coming up next here. It's the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. And let me make a note of that TJ Watt deal coming up next. I have to chat with you about my friends at PermaPure Foundation Repair before we do anything like that, though. These guys are the best. And here we are hitting the summer. Maybe the soil's starting to get dry around the house. It's starting to pull apart. You know what that is? That is soil shifting and moving. And when that happens on your property, it can wreak havoc on your foundation. So if you do have any concerns, you got cracks in your brick, sticky doors, uneven floors, call my friends at PermaPure Foundation Repair. It's 214-831-2167. Welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Segment's brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today at carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214-817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Looking forward to the Rangers getting back to action tomorrow against the Tigers. And Jared Sandler will be joining us at 4:40 tomorrow. We'll be excited about that. We'll be at the ballpark. See Wild join us next Monday. Start getting us ready for the trade deadline and all that. But we have significant NFL news that could impact the Dallas Cowboys in the negotiation with Micah Parsons. It's TJ Watt getting done here. Congrats to him. 3 years and is it $123 million? How much of that's guaranteed?
108.
Yeah, 108. It's going to be 41 mil per year.
Highest of any non-quarterback in NFL history. So he passes Ja'Marr Chase, who just signed his deal.
And is he the best overall edge player?
I still think it's Myles Garrett.
Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I'd probably go Garrett 1, Watt 2. But there is, I mean, geez, TJ Watt. I feel like anytime you're watching one of those Steelers primetime games, he's doing something to just wreck the game and give them a chance to win it.
Is Micah Parsons deserving of earning more just because he's a great pass rusher? Like, how are you looking at this as the Cowboys? Are you thinking TJ Watt is incredible, rushing the passer, stopping the run, complete player? Micah Parsons might be as good as him as an edge. Maybe not. I mean, he hasn't produced as much and doesn't stop the run at as high of a rate. How do you look at that if you're the Cowboys? Like, does Micah deserve more legit? Micah's way younger. Micah's less hurt, you know? There's a lot to go in this evaluation, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that Micah is a better pass rusher than TJ Watt. You mentioned being in the prime of his career. And just those two things right there are...
And you base that off of pass rush success rate or pressure totals?
Yeah, I think if you looked at the pressure totals and if you looked at the... how quickly you're beating the offensive tackle and stuff like that. I think Micah is absolutely that guy right now. And the prime of his career factor and just kind of the nature of how it goes. It's like, is TJ Watt better than Myles Garrett? No, he just got a little bit more. Right? So that's just kind of the nature of these deals.
Yeah, I would look at it like, man, we are really not good stopping the run. Micah Parsons is maybe our best run stopper, but compared to the guys at the absolute top, doesn't he is part of us being vulnerable to the run. I think that matters. Well, Chuck, how about you? Maybe it doesn't in the economy
of it. No, it does.
But when
I'm
talking to the agent, I'm like, you're not going to whip our ass on this. Your guy's not a complete player. He hasn't really been at OTAs his entire career.
I would point to if I'm Micah's agent, I'm looking at, okay, we can talk about all the run stuff all you want, but look at the difference in the way quarterbacks play you when he's on the field and when he doesn't. Yeah. And when he was not on the field last year, you made quarterbacks look as good as Josh Allen last year. Josh Allen was a superhuman MVP type candidate. Yeah. And when he was on the field, when Micah was on the field, you turned the quarterbacks that you were facing into Daniel freaking Jones, bro. So just that alone right there, like, we can talk about the run game all we want. How about you build some level of a D? There's 10 other guys. You got a bunch of guys that don't know how to play the run. I am the difference maker on this defense.
Yeah.
And any other person that gets any type of pass rush success is due to the fact that I'm the one who's drawing all the attention.
Yeah, make no mistake, I'm not letting Micah Parsons go because he is an on-off switch for this defense. He's off, and it's a horrible defense, maybe one of the worst five in the league.
Yeah, it's like you can. We talk about this all the time with prospects in the draft. It's like, do you want to harp on the things a guy doesn't do, or do you want to kind of focus on what he does do, and let's not pretend that what Micah does do isn't probably still the best in the sport when it comes to just simply getting after the passer, and it's not just we know where he's coming from. Micah can come from anywhere to get after your quarterback.
What about his argument, what about Wolchuk's argument about playoff football?
Yeah, I would disagree. When you look at the pressure numbers, Micah doesn't drop off. The sack totals do, but the pressure numbers are still very, very consistent. And if you go back and watch that Green Bay game, he's blowing crap up, but there's only so much one guy can do.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's how I would approach it.
But the other
games, I don't remember him blowing crap up in that Green Bay game.
And that's fine. We all have different memory capabilities and things like that. Go back and watch the game and watch him blow up the offensive line.
I watched 44-19 week two against the Saints when he was out there, and he didn't make David Carr look like Daniel Jones.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to crap on Mikey here.
But that is cherry picking, Wolchuk.
I mean, it's not cherry picking. It's saying if these are the quarterbacks.
You have to dominate every game?
Last year.
How many sacks leads the league and how many games are there?
Okay, you're not going to get a sack defense, every game. What's Micah Parsons' high sack rate for his career? What's the most sacks he's had in a season?
When your entire defense sucks ass, it's very easy for an offensive coordinator to eliminate one guy when you're able to just run the ball at will.
So when I'm paying a guy $42 million a year and you want to say, hey, I want to make the rest of my defense better, and you're the Dallas Cowboys that constantly talk about their salary cap, how do I do that?
How much better is the Cowboys' defense last year if they have Myles Garrett?
I don't think really that much better.
I agree 100%.
Right.
So Myles Garrett should get paid?
Yeah.
Okay.
He should. And I think Micah should get paid.
All right.
The conversation here is for the Dallas Cowboys. What should you do? And I do think it's fair, and it's not bashing the player, but you've got to have hard conversations about, is this player worth that money? And TJ Watts had 22 and a half sacks. He had 19 sacks in 2025. Micah's never had more than 14 sacks. So I'm in agreement that he is one of the top three pass rushers in all of the sport. I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion that he's better necessarily than TJ Watt is.
And do you have to stop the run better to say I'm one of the best at my position? Maybe it's a non-factor because of how important the passing game is. I'm legitimately open-minded to that. I'm just asking the question. But I think it is relevant today because Micah's saying the Cowboys are dragging this out for no reason. Are we discussing maybe the reasons? You know, that they're not willing to do the deal for 26-year-old Micah Parsons that the Steelers are willing to do. I mean, and it's 1 year less than what Micah will get and about $30 million less guaranteed.
Yeah, I don't think it's a Micah thing with them because I think they do this to everybody. Right? Don't the Cowboys do this to everybody?
Yeah, they just kind of wait and play it out.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I wonder if they are negotiating at all or if they're just letting the time be the thing. I wonder if they have much urgency in this at all, you know, when it comes down to it. It's kind of a mystery. Like, to hear how Mike McCarthy would describe whatever that was in the week after the season ended before the Cowboys officially decided to move on, it sounds bizarre and weird sometimes. And it's difficult to make rhyme or reason out of some of this stuff. All righty, it is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 through the Fan. Least accurate quarterbacks when targeting an open receiver 10-plus yards downfield in 2024. Deshaun Watson was the worst. Number two was Patrick Mahomes at 34.5%. Number three was Cooper Rush at 34.7%. So that's pretty bad. Least accurate when targeting an open receiver 10-plus yards downfield.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Downfield, I guess, you know, my question is, how does Mahomes go there? Does this prove that completion percentage just is not a very good way of measuring quarterback play? What do you think, Chief?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm texting John Owning right now to see if he can quantify to all of us just how good or bad Micah Parsons is at stopping the run. I would just love to get some level of understanding of that. So what was it exactly that you just said? Because I would definitely agree that completion percentage is not ideal.
Owning has done some stories on that.
Yeah, I might be able to go look at his Twitter.
He is. No, Owning has gone on record and, like, provided, you know, numbers and videos and stuff like that, you know, to to try and prove that point that Micah is better at the run than most people give him credit for.
Gotcha. That's true.
I'm not even sure which way. I'm just curious.
Oh, no, he is on the pro run side.
He is. Okay.
He's pro run.
Well, I just love with something tangible, you know, other than Micah sucks at stopping the run. It's like, let's kind of.
Yeah, and I don't think he sucks at stopping the run.
The problem is
TJ Watt's the best.
Yeah.
That's the comp here.
Yeah, we're looking at the best. Max Crosby's really good at it. So, like, teams definitely can say, hey, we're going to run at Micah, trying to wear him down. And that's proven to, at times, work. It's not like, oh, he's an awful run defender. He's not. That's not the case.
Well, the thing about that happens to Micah is that his ability to get up the field puts him out of position, and people are able to kind of pin him and knock him up the field.
Right.
That's the thing. And we've seen stuff when they get Micah in space. We've seen that with our own eyes. Like the read option stuff, when he gets paralyzed. Like, he plays against the Eagles, and all of a sudden you're like, you know, a little bit better, I think, against the Commanders. Two of his better games last year, I think 4.5 of his sacks last year were against the Commanders, you know.
And the Eagles definitely stand out as remembering.
Yeah, I mean, there are times where Micah looks like that teams, if they put him in space and make him have to determine one way or another to play the quarterback or play the pitch, it paralyzes him. And that's where I think that people are saying, well, he's bad playing the run, because there's that indecision that goes about with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the Pro Football Focus numbers here, I brought him up, show he is top third of the league, which puts him as the Cowboys' single best run defender. The only guy close is Eric Kendricks, who they let walk and bring in two of the worst rated run stopping linebackers in the NFL. So I don't think this is going to change. You know, if Micah Parsons just holds his edge, but nobody else is flowing to the ball or beating their block, it's going to look like, wow, they're just running right at Micah and having success. Because nobody else on their defense is doing their job at an above average level. And a lot of them, not even like beyond the worst quarter of the league.
Yeah.
That's how much they've let this run defense deteriorate. And I think it's going to take multiple years if Eberflus is going to fix it. I believe in his scheme, but I just don't think they have the horses to pull that off right now. Krusty's Corner's coming up next. Brian, where are you taking us?
Yeah, I've got some injury updates on some of the guys, and I want to go with you guys and talk about that. We'll do that next.
Thank you, Jacob Ray, and for Lucius this week. Done a nice job. Lucius will be back on Monday. Dave Raymond's coming up at 4 o'clock. Time now for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Brian.
Thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate that. And thank you very much to Reliant for their continued work with Krusty's Corner. Appreciate that. Couple things that I've got updates on, because there was some concern that we were talking about with Donovan Ezeraku's contract.
Yeah.
And I asked some people in the front office, I said, do you feel like you could get this thing done before you guys get on that airplane and head to Oxnard? And I got a yes. So we've had a lot of problems with these second round contracts and, you know, the guaranteed monies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're confident before this team leaves that Donovan Ezeraku will not be a holdout.
Yeah, so he should get done. I mean, the pick right ahead of him, Alfred Collins, the defensive tackle out of Texas, just got done today. Trey Amos just got done from Washington, the corner. R.J. Harvey, the running back in Denver, just got done. So the floodgates have opened, it seems like, for these second-round picks today.
Yeah, so they are, that's something. Because I was honestly worried about this, and I brought it up because I thought they were going to be pretty thin at defensive end. I thought they were going to, you know, with the Micah situation, if Ezeraku holds out. Well, then they also brought me around to asking about Sam Williams. And I was curious about Sam Williams because I'm thinking, well, gosh, if Micah's out and Donovan's out, you know, is Sam going to practice on a limited basis? You know, how's that going to work out? And I was just curious. So I reached out to, again, a couple of people in the organization, and they have a plan for what they want to do for Sam and how they want to handle Sam and how he practices.
Making Mr. Limited?
Well, the thing about it is early in the sessions, early in the week of practice, it's not a grind to have to practice. You know, it's that a period where you really kind of ease in.
Simulated game time.
You go in and you're kind of like, you're getting acclimated. mm-hmm. to what's going on. The league, you know, the way the Players Association, the way they negotiated all that was that, you know, hey, we really don't have two-a-days anymore. We really don't have beat the players up as much like they used to.
It's a damn shame.
They're all Camp Cupcake now, right?
Well, but it's the league agreed. The league, the owners agreed, and the players asked for it, and the league agreed. And so here we are. But with Sam, he should be okay. He'll do everything that they'll ask him to do. It's when they get into pads, when they get into the padded part of practice, that's when they're going to have to ease him in even more.
That's so crazy. Isn't his injury like 12 months old?
Yeah, but they have a plan for what they think that how they think they need to handle this one. And so I would just, as we're out there and we start to, we wonder, well, what are they doing with Sam? Well, they're doing this with Sam because they feel like that they need to make sure that he is absolutely ready. Sam's going to wear a brace too, from what I understand, on that knee, which is, you know, you think for a guy that's kind of an edge rusher guy that you would be a little bit, you know, you probably wouldn't want to, mm-hmm. that'd be something, but we'll keep an eye on that. But I was hearing that they were going to have a special brace for him as well.
Wonder why it's been so difficult to heal.
You know, I think
these guys come back 8-9 months out. The injury was July 28th.
Oh yeah. We were all standing out there when it happened, you know, watching a special teams practice, and all of a sudden it, you know, he goes running down there on a gunner position at the outside right, and next thing you know, he's laying on the ground. So, but yeah, they have a plan for him, and the part of the practice, like I said, the padded part of the practice is going to be more of a ramp up period than it is to, hey, let's throw you out there and kind of see what happens with all that. All right, everybody good with that? Mm-hmm.
I mean, I figured they probably would. Yeah, I mean, in some way, you know, maybe give him an extra day off here and there or whatever, but it makes sense. I don't know that that's unique to Sam or just how they would approach it with kind of any one of these guys.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you guys this question if I could. Do you guys kind of feel like that CeeDee Lamb is the one that has the chip on his shoulder of the two receivers?
Who's the chippiest?
Well, I mean, chip as far as
wanting to prove.
Yeah, I'm of the. In my humble opinion, I think CeeDee Lamb is getting tired of hearing about George Pickens. Hmm. And I say that in a respect. I don't say that as a bitter and, you know.
What makes you say that?
Did he tweet something?
No, I just feel like that CeeDee is such a competitive player that here's everybody's just enamored, and we should be. We should be enamored with George Pickens.
It's the shiny new toy.
Exactly. I mean, all the shows, all the media, all the questions. I mean, it's CeeDee in a way is going to be a great teammate. He's going to, you know, he's going to embrace having George Pickens opposite him and
said all the right things.
Saying all the right things. But I believe there's a side of CeeDee Lamb that's like, all right, you MFers, you guys keep talking about this guy. I think when we talk about who the top 10, you know, the DallasCowboys.com loves to do this. This was kind of a fun thing that was the top 10 players from training camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then where did certain players fall as the way they practiced and all that. And I hope that CeeDee does get an opportunity to play in some of these preseason games. I hope Pickens does and Dak does too. But I kind of feel like this is going to be one of those things where we're going to walk out of training camp. And if you had to pick like one guy at camp and you would say, this is going to be the number one best player in training camp this year, who would you have? Would you have CeeDee Lamb? Do you think if you made that prediction?
That's smart money's on CeeDee Lamb. Yeah. Maybe
Dak or
Deron Bland. Ball skills.
Oso Digizua, maybe it's Tyler Smith.
Hopefully it's Tyler Guyton.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
That'd be nice.
Okay, so I think you know, CD probably has a chip on his shoulder right now. Yeah. I think he will remind everybody multiple times throughout the season that he's definitely the better player. But you know, I think we're excited because George Pickens is the best 88 co-star we've ever had, right?
Right.
He's the highest talented guy they've ever had in the wide receiver number two spot, so that's fun. But I'll tell you what, when it comes to overall chip on shoulder attitude, nobody comes close to what George Pickens has done, you know? Like, he's given up on multiple plays. He's fighting the other team. This dude has the biggest chip on his shoulder in the entire league.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I do think as a guy who missed training camp last year,
mm-hmm.
CD Lamb probably going to try and squeeze all the juice out of this one.
Yeah, so, it's fun, right? It's like a fun competitiveness between the two.
Yeah, it's a good thing, like an iron sharpens iron type thing. Like you said, not a bitterness type deal.
No, I don't think it's going to be a bitterness thing at all. I just feel like that it's going to be a very competitive, like we're going to get wowed with some George Pickens receptions, and we're going to be talking about it. Three live mics are going to be rolling right along, and we're going to be talking about it, and it's going to be, wow, what a play by Pickens. But it's going to turn into, wow, what a play by Lamb.
Sure.
Yeah, it's going to energize him to
I can absolutely see it. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. They're like, hey, anything you can do, hey, I can do it, and I'll do it a little bit better than you did. Okay, right. Well, then watch me.
Yeah, you want that. Like absolutely. That's absolutely what you want.
Yeah, I am totally on board because I think that Lamb is going to go out and show everybody why he's your number one receiver here. I really do.
Well, and Dak talked about it last week. I know Shoddy talked about it at OTAs and mini camps. Like so far, they have been celebrating each other's success.
And they have.
If I'm Lamb, I'm watching Pickens have success. I'm thinking, wow, the attention might finally be off me for the first time since Amari Cooper was good.
Yeah, this is the way Lamb is, his demeanor, the way. I don't think he has any ill will towards Pickens, but this is a guy that's that alpha kind of guy. You know, and everybody's talking about what a great addition Pickens has been or it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Lamb is like going, all right, you guys keep talking about this. Keep talking about him and keep bringing it up and all that. And I'm going to show you why I'm the one that's not having to have to try and fight for a new contract.
So Lamb is your prediction for the number one seed for the all Oxnard team?
I think that if we had to, and it unfortunately we don't get to be there the whole time, but the time we get to, if we had a deal of the players that we saw, top 10 of the players we saw, I'm going to make a prediction that Lamb is going to be number one.
I love it.
That would be my thing.
Going with Jonathan Mingo myself. You know,
I
like to play the long shots.
Yeah. Right,
let's get some odds going here. Dave Raymond, Rangers Broadcasting, joins us next year. It's the GBAC Nation on 105 Through the Fan.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.